Get snacking and get cracking with a snack that packs a protein punch. Pistachios are known for their protein power, fiber, and better-for-you unsaturated fats for a combination that may help you keep feeling fuller longer. Wonderful Pistachios is a good source of protein with zero guilt. Each one-ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. I love that they come in a variety of sizes and flavors, making this the perfect protein snack for any on-the-go adventure. Check out wonderfulpistachios.com to learn more about how these little green wonders can power up your day.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Flow Track Podcast. Thanks, everybody, who's tuning in on YouTube Live. Subscribe to the Flow Track Podcast YouTube channel. Let us know, where are you watching from this morning? If you're in the United States, had another early morning. I am Kevin Sully, joined by the fourth happiest man on this planet. It's Gordon Mack.
Hell yeah. Went 2 for 2 with my picks. Gotta love it. But who cares about whether I win or lose money? That performance by Elaine Thompson Herah was incredible. 1061 into a headwind. It wasn't even close. She was celebrating before she even crossed the line. And it wasn't like she beat a depleted field. She beat the best field we probably have ever seen in any global final. And she did it convincingly. And wow. That's all I got to say is wow.
Yeah. Listen, this event was just building and building and building. Saw how fast they go in the first round, then in the semis earlier on today. Frazier Price drops a 10.73. Four women go sub 8. Talu obviously was the big story out of the first round. So you're thinking, okay, this is going to be the greatest women's 100 meter field in history. And you could argue that it was based on what we saw in those first two rounds. But Elaine Thompson Herah's last 50 made this a blowout. It was boltish over the last 50, even pointing to the clock, celebrating early. She had just complete command, complete control. This defends her title from Rio. Frazier Price and Sharika Jackson run really well. You know, they go 10.74 and 10.76, but the 10.61. Number two all time, ties Flojo's second best mark in history. If you run that, you just have to tip your cap if you're the rest of the field. Because if you look at this race, Gordon, I mean, it was just a clinic that Thompson Herah put on.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of hilarious looking at that photo of Elaine Thompson Herah celebrating and the look on Shelly-Ann's face of just disappointment. And it's kind of weird, right? Jamaica did a huge sweep, right? Mm-hmm. And you would think there would be like this joy, but you could tell that all three of those Jamaican athletes thought they should have won or they could have beaten each other. And mm-hmm. to them, this wasn't a team effort of going 1, 2, 3. This was them, like, you know, losing to who they thought they all thought they should have won, right? So while the team Jamaica and everyone in the country of Jamaica and Jamaican fans are celebrating, I know for a fact Frazier Price and Sharika Jackson are like, no, that should have been me, which is great. That's why they're running so fast. They've been beating up on each other throughout the entire season. You saw, you know, Frazier Price got the double at the Jamaican trials. Now Elaine Thompson Herah gets the win here. Sharika Jackson is probably, I mean, Sharika Jackson's going to be someone to look out for in that 200. Mm-hmm. Man, the Jamaican trio is a treat, and we are very lucky to be seeing this. And of course, one can only imagine what it would have been like if Sha'Carri Richardson was in that race. I don't know if she would. Do you think she would have been able to beat Elaine Thompson-Herah on that? Do you think she would have been running 10:60 or 10:59?
I mean, if you ask me what would be the one ingredient to add to this final to make it even better, it was already pretty good. It would have been adding her. But no, I think this was Thompson-Herah's day. 10:61 is otherworldly. It's only ahead of, like, or only behind Flojo's mark. As I said before, I think this was going to be Thompson-Herah's race. Listen, now they each have two Olympic golds, Thompson-Herah and Fraser Price. You look at Fraser Price's entire body of work. Of course, she's older. She's amassed much more medals. But this could have been just the cherry on the top of her entire career. And, I mean, her career is fantastic. And she has a bad race, quote-unquote, and still gets silver and just adds to her medal haul. I mean, she's been doing this now since 2008. Nothing to be ashamed of in that. I get that she's disappointed. And Shrika Jackson, she has a bronze medal now in the 400 and in the 100. That's incredible.
You know who might be doing that tomorrow? You might be seeing exactly. An American doing that on the men's side.
Yeah, hopefully Fred Curley can channel Shrika Jackson.
For those, I know you said I shouldn't be doing this, but I did it. It wasn't to a headwind, right? So
you can do it. Have fun.
Naturally, I want to figure out what would this have been if there was no wind at all. If there was no wind, it would have been a 10:57. Mm-hmm. No wind. With 10 meters altitude, because I put in the Tokyo altitude. Now, with that said, if she had a plus 2.0 wind, maybe mm-hmm. we're talking about a low 10:50. Like if she had the perfect tailwind that was 100% legal. I mean, obviously, mm-hmm. that's not how it works, but it just shows. This wasn't a 10:61 with a plus 1.9. It was into a headwind. Incredible.
Yeah. Well, speeches. You also got to talk, whenever there's a fast time, we always talk about all the things that could have made it faster. And we don't talk about the things that made it fast in the first place. By all accounts, the conditions were perfect. Good humidity level, good temperature. The track is obviously fast. We've now seen the women's 100, but we also had the men's 100 today, which produced a bunch of quick times too. And then you throw in the fact that you have this incredible field. So everybody knew that they had to run their best race if they wanted to win. And all those things are pointing in the direction of a fast time. If you told me at the beginning of the year, 10:61 for the Olympic final, I'd have said that's ambitious. But if you told me that after Fraser Price had run 10:63 already this year and all those other low 10.7s that we saw from Thompson and what we saw in the first round and what we saw in the semi, it tracks. But no doubt it was one of the all-time performances, and the image of her pointing at the clock as she crosses the line is going to be one that's right up there with Bolt celebrating early and all the other. I think back to Jetter anchoring the US 4x1 team in London as one of those photos that you never forget. But yeah, sweet for Jamaica. Sweet for Jamaica, 1, 2, 3.
Big shout out to Kai in the chat, All in the Game in the chat, and DC Noel in the chat for all congratulating me with my prediction. She was a – what was her odds? She was a plus 175 to win. So mm-hmm. I put $100 on, and I win 275. Pretty good. Pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah, and in retro, you watch the final, and you think, wait a minute. How was she ever considered the underdog? But sprinting gives us more data points than most other track events. We just had the 10,000 yesterday where we were basically grasping at straws because how many 10,000s are there in a year? But when you factor in how small the margins are, and we don't really know in finals or in prelims and semifinals how hard people are going, you can lead yourself to make some assumptions that ultimately prove out to be incorrect. Again, I think Fraser Price ran a solid race. I think Jackson ran a phenomenal race. It's just when someone runs 10:61, what are you supposed to do? There's no game plan to beat that unless you have a time machine and you can go back to 1988.
So we talk about legacy. Obviously, Shelly-Ann Fraser Price is at nearing the end of her legacy, end of her putting a bow on her resume. Mm-hmm. But now that Elaine Thompson-Herah has two Olympic golds, has a faster PB, and is now 8-2 head-to-head against Shelly Ann, should we be kind of thinking about maybe putting Elaine Thompson ahead of Shelly Ann on the all-time Jamaican mark? Like, it just seemed like, it's Shelly Ann. It's Shelly Ann. Duh, guys, obviously. See, you've been watching the past 10 years. It's Shelly Ann. Yeah. But now it's like, well, have you been watching the past two Olympics? It might be Elaine Thompson.
Well, in between those Olympics, though, you had 2019, where she got another gold. Okay, so let's just limit this conversation to the 100. Let's not bring the 200 in. So let's just talk about who has the better 100-meter resume. I mean, Fraser Price still has 6 100-meter gold medals. She doesn't have the fastest time, and obviously Thompson-Herah is now the two-time Olympic champion, but just a longevity, and part of that's because she's older. So Thompson-Herah, I think with this win now, Gordon, has the opportunity to catch her, because if she did not win this race, then Fraser-Price has 7 global outdoor 100-meter titles, and Thompson-Herah has 1. So instead of being 7-1, it's now 6-2 with, as we talked about before, championship coming up 22, 23, 24. But I think she's going to need a couple more years, a couple more titles before we start to have that conversation and have it be an actual conversation.
And while Shelly Ann, you can argue, will be going, you know, her ability will be going down as she gets older. She's, 34 now? Sha'Carri is going to make things a little bit harder on Elaine Thompson if you want to run here with multiple straight gold medals.
Yeah. In a way, this was the result that's going to yield the most interest moving forward, because if it was Fraser-Price winning the gold, you could say, okay, and Thompson-Herah didn't have a good Olympics, then, okay, it's going to be a clear handoff from Fraser-Price to Richardson, from one dominant figure to the next. And we'd look at Thompson-Herah and we'd say, yeah, she was great in 2016, but had all those injuries issues and could never get back. Instead, we got Thompson-Herah now at her peak, going against Richardson at her peak, and we'll see what Fraser-Price is able to do. Again, I don't know. I don't know if she said anything about it, but if you're Fraser-Price, why would you stop? You ran your PB this year and you got a silver medal in what to you was a disappointing race. I would think you'd keep going because there aren't any off years on the horizon now.
Yeah, she'll keep going until Mother Nature tells her to stop, right? I guess Justin Gatlin went all the way to 38, 39, 40. I can see Shelly Ann keep going until the wheels fall off and she's not able to run the 10.8s, 10.7s anymore. But as long as she can wake up on a random day and be able to throw down a 10.9 with very minimal training, I think she's going to keep going.
Mm-hmm. And this just sets up beautifully for this 200 later on in the meet with the Jamaican trio trying to recreate the sweep, maybe, but it's going to be tough with the Americans in there, but also Shauna Miller-Weibo as well, too. We won't see Dina Asher-Smith in there. She did not make the final in the 100 and then said afterwards that she's going to scratch out of the 200. So the 200 does lose some firepower with the reigning world champion. But if someone runs 10.61 in 100, going to have a pretty good 200-meter time. And we all saw Thompson-Herah's, you know, Beijing 2015 200. We know how fast she can go in that event. So we could see something historical again from her in the 200. What else surprised you in this 100? The Americans only got one to the final in Tiana Daniels. Tolu, who I mentioned, ran really good through the first two rounds. Still finished fourth, solid performance, but 10.91, which is slower than she had run previously. Switzerland gets two to the finals, and Daryl Netta makes it for Great Britain.
Yeah, Tolu, you could tell in the semifinals that she wasn't going to medal, because when her and Sharika both ran like their 10.7s or 10.8s in the semis, Tolu looked like she was going to – it was her final, and Sharika looked like it was her semi. And like, you kind of saw that separation there. But we got to talk about it. The big news is who's not here is Blessing Okabare gets popped. And not for some weird you know, drug you never heard of that was this, or it's not a whereabouts failure. It's straight up HGH.
Yeah.
We had an athlete who was going to potentially be in a medal running. HGH, like, what is it, 1990? Like, what's going on?
Yeah. I mean, that's something that you don't see in terms of positive tests. And I know they've had a couple different ways to test for it throughout the years. But that's the one thing you see getting flagged a couple times in major sports, too. Obviously, there's a controversy in the NFL around HGH usage and other major team sports. So fortuitous that the news came for track and field before the semis started. Now, apparently this test was on July 19th, but they just found out basically the morning of the semifinals, right? And the finals. So if they got the test results a day later, she could have been in this race. And then that would have been a massive mess for track and field to deal with. Although, would she have finished in the medals? Likely not, given how fast it was to medal, but it would have pushed somebody else out of the final. And I'm always curious about the timing of these things, Gordon, because again, day earlier, she doesn't run even in the prelims. A day later, she potentially runs in the Olympic final. But it came right on time.
This is like me putting on tinfoil hat. Ready? Putting on tinfoil hat. Do you think there was maybe we don't need to tell anyone about this if she doesn't make the 100 meter semis? So then we can. They were just sitting on it, and then once they realize, oh crap, she's making the semis. All right, now we got to do it. Like they try to like, because you know, like all these AIU situations and WADA and USADA and all that. They happen like in a time machine. We're like, wait, this happened like 4 months ago, 5 months ago. This has been going on for 18 months. This is, I mean, in this situation, it's been going on for 11 days. So in retrospect, you're like, hey, that's pretty quick. But still 11 days seems like a long time when you think about it, right?
Got to send it to the lab. You got to bet. Yeah, I do not have a tinfoil hat on, but it wouldn't surprise me if they expedited the process for people. And maybe there was something else that led them to believe like that they wanted to make sure that they got these specific test results. It's been a tough couple days for Nigeria. We saw some of their athletes were protesting because about 10 of them weren't able to run because they didn't have the minimum level of testing done by the federation. So the athletes were very upset with their own federation. We saw Divine Odaduru get DQ'd in the 100. Going back to 2019, even before that, but 2019, there was a big issue too, because they just didn't enter athletes in the correct events. So Okobare and Odaduru in Doha, I remember, were upset about that. But just a tough couple days for the Nigerian track and field contingent. They did get a guy through in the 100, running a pretty quick time, which we'll talk about in a little bit. But yeah, any other thoughts on this race?
Well, I don't want to overlook this whole Blessing Okobare thing, because she made the world championship final in 2011, the Olympic Games in 2012, 2013 she made the final, 2015 she made the final, 16 semis, 17 semis, 2021 it was going to be semis, that's in 100. She made the 200, 2013 and 2016, 2019. She made the long jump in 2008, 2011, 2012. And now, like, HGH, like, in year now, like, are we supposed to assume that this is the first time she's taken HGH? Mm-hmm. Like, this that's isn't the, like a,
the,
like.
That's the conundrum.
It's like, we're kind of like, oh, you're out. But, like, what about, like, she's been, like, a 10-year vet. This is a 10-year vet, like, first-time drug positive. And it's like, what are we supposed to think of those past 10 years and all of the potential permutations of what could have happened in different world championship Olympic game events? It's kind of like, I think we're becoming numb to positive tests in a way. And like, obviously this doesn't cancel out any of those performances, right? Like, does this cancel out her 10:63? I don't think so.
No, right? if the sample was taken on July the 19th after the 10:63, they're not going to go back and pull those performances or scratch them for the record or take away any medals. But from a outside perspective, how you choose to view people who get busted for steroids later on in their career, how you want to look at the rest of their career. I mean, I think it's entirely justified to look at it with an air of suspicion. Something like HGH too, I would think would be carrying the maximum penalty here too. So after appeal, if she is still found guilty of this, then I would think she'd get that 4-year ban for sure. Yeah. And it was weird too, cause she was upset. She took a stand about these issues with the Nigerian Federation and drug testing. So it was just odd, like, timing to have those two stories back to back. Basically, hey, the Nigerian Federation didn't do their job in making sure their Olympic athletes had the requisite number of tests. And then, oh, Nigeria's biggest star gets popped for HGH in a test that was 10 days before the Olympics. Like, that's just that's just bizarre, right? And I don't know what to think of it. And with all these doping things, my first inclination now is just to, like, take a step back and wait until you get more information to judge it. But again, HGH is one of those things where they're not going to give you much wiggle room if you took it. It's not going to be something that they're going to let you just sit out 6 months and move on from.
Can you get HGH in a pork burrito? We figured that one out yet.
I do not believe there's any
pig offal cross HGH.
There's no, I don't think there's cross contamination issues with HGH. Got to be honest, just like you, I'd be like, I haven't heard that in a while. Like, I haven't heard, I've been researching steroids. I've had to research a lot of drugs over the past few years, but that was one that you did not see on your radar. All right. Do you want to talk now about the men's 100 or the women's pre 800 or the mixed 4x4? You can choose.
Let's talk about the men's 100. Man, Trayvon Bromell, he's hurt. So I'm not.
Wait. I was gonna say, you don't know that.
D looks hurt. You don't run. You don't go backwards if you've been dominant the entire season, going all the way back to 2020. You could, with one loss, and then all of a sudden you're going backwards in the first round. And it wasn't fast. It was only 10:05. I feel like I don't know what Bromell is going on. Like, but if Bromell goes on to win this, you got to throw everything you know out about track and field out the window, because I feel like that was a sign that just something not right with him right now physically, that he wasn't able to keep his form through the entire 100. Like, he just didn't look good. I don't know what it was. It's a bummer too, because right, this guy is the most incredible story. From being left for dead with all of his injuries to now being top in the world. And you hope that he would be able to end it with an Olympic medal, but I don't know.
It would be
people who bet on him are freaking out right now.
It would be a cruel twist of fate for him to have gone the last 2 years healthy and then suffer an injury here. Let me ask you this, and I know this is going to be difficult because it's a 10-second race. At what point in that race did you become concerned about him?
I'm not sure exactly if I remember or recall, but like it was near the end for me. Mm-hmm. I think it was like 50 to 60 in. He just looked like he was running backwards. It looked like he was running backwards. That's what it looked like.
Okay, for me it was immediately. Because the start didn't look good. There was no explosion really out of the blocks that I saw, again, from my perspective. But you could be right as well too. And he said after the race, we had that. Did we put that quote up yet? Yeah, could we put that quote up again if we haven't yet? Yeah, it's tough to get a lot of information from the mix zone. So, because there's no video interviews, and if you're watching the American feed, you can see it. But he said in this clip on Twitter, I think we can pull it up right now. Yeah, here we go. This is from Steve Wilson. He said, "Shoot, I was calm. Honestly, I have no words for it. It don't look like I actually pushed myself, and that is going to be the thing my coach is mad about." So, listen, athletes are not going to say, especially in the middle of a competition, my hamstring is in terrible shape right now. They usually wait until after. That's just the nature of sports. But he didn't mention anything there. Basically, when I read that quote, he's basically, he kind of sleptwalked through it and maybe thought he could get through with an easier effort. Now, his heat was pretty quick, obviously, because he got fourth in it and he beat some people who were auto qualifiers in other heats. But you just don't see this. You don't see someone who's a medal contender in the first round have to get a small queue going through. Because you have three spots. And that must have just been a nervous half hour. He had to sit through five heats, Gordon. He was in heat two. There were seven heats. He had to sit through five more heats to see if his time would hold up. So I don't know. Like, I think your theory is possible that he's hurt. There could be, hey, he just had an off race and he was in a bad heat. That could be a possibility. Maybe the peaking happened too soon. I don't know, but it was concerning to say the least. And we'll find out in that semi. We'll find out real quick tomorrow.
We will. We will find out real
quick. If he doesn't have it. Yeah. If he doesn't have it, he doesn't have it at that point. But I don't know. It's not something you can chalk up to, hey, he stumbled out of the blocks like in Monaco. He had a bad start, right? The start just didn't look explosive. That first 30 meters, I thought he was going to put away the field and then shut it down, just like we've seen a lot of favorites do. And that just never happened. And then I was waiting and waiting and waiting. And then I thought, okay, maybe he'll separate the last 50. And it just wasn't there. So I don't know what to think. I do not know what to think. Any sort of explanation is possible. And if you want to say, okay, he's not in 9.77 shape, he still should have been able to come out there and clock a low 9.9.
Yeah.
He's really consistent with low 9.9s.
Yeah, and outside of him, everyone else pretty looked good, I felt. Fred Kerley looked back to like Olympic Trials Fred Kerley, which got me excited because, spoiler alert, I think I'm going to put my next $100 on Fred Kerley meddling because I think that's going to be good odds. But yeah, I mean, Baker looked good, Curly good, the Simbine looked good, DeGrasse looked really good.
DeGrasse's moment here, 9.9. It's not Bromel, the winning time possibility slows down, and obviously that puts Baker in the mix, but it really is going to help Andre DeGrasse.
Yeah, and Andre DeGrasse, this is like season's best because he's constantly been in weird like wind situations where it's like headwinds or just bad weather, and he's never really put down like a good time in 2021. So this is the first time getting close to the 9.8s with a 9.91 win legal. Yeah, and Jacobs, the Italian guy, I think he's gonna be.
Yeah.
I don't know if he's gonna be able to put together three in a row. But yeah, you gotta think DeGrasse, Baker. If Bromel's out of the picture, DeGrasse, Baker, Curley, and Sebene, that's going to be like your battle for your top three, in my opinion.
All right, we're going to go back to the women's 100 here because it's come to my attention that we're drawing heat on social media from not the usual suspects, but the Jamaican team here. And ordinarily, I let this one go because ordinarily when we get heat on social media, it's responding to a take from Gordon that I don't in any way, shape, or form agree with or endorse. But did we not have a clip on the site where it said Jamaica's going to sweep? Did my co-host, Gordon Mack, not bet $100 of his own money on Elaine Thompson hurrah? Did that not happen? Look at our website. It's right there. Now, maybe they're referring to the 4x1 stuff, and that was pre, you know, Sha'Carri news, obviously. But when it comes time to the open 100, we've been pretty clear. This is going to be Jamaica, Jamaica, Jamaica. And you went insofar as to put down your own money on it.
Yeah. I think a lot of people on the internet just like, they just think everyone is against them. Right. And we are American based. So we are going to be naturally pro America because that's where we're from. But like, in this situation, I was pro getting the picks right, and I had Elaine Thompson.
You were pro your money.
I was pro my money. And Flowcheck, where do we rank? What was the Flowcheck rankings for this event? Let's bring that up. Where did the Flowcheck rankings rank? We had, oh, look at this. We had Fraser Price 1, Thompson 2, Okabare 3, who got popped, and then Jackson 4, and Talu 5. So, like, if you take out, I was doing pretty good with my Jamaica sweep with then Talu coming in 4th. So,
yeah,
just for the record, I think we're doing a good job with. Where is the USA bias there? I'm struggling to find it.
Look, Jamaica's in the chat. I appreciate it. They're always passionate. They're always here. I don't. Maybe they're going back to Sha'Carri days. Maybe earlier on in the season, around the, or maybe even as late as the trials. But I don't know. Oh wait, we have one here. Usain Bolt needs to come out of retirement to save Jamaican men's sprints. I stand by that take.
Yeah,
I stand by that take 100%. The Jamaican men aren't looking too good. But oh, look at this other one. Jamaican women are going to run the show at the Olympics. That was a month ago. Jamaica are runaway favorites. Women's 4x1 Olympic preview. Team Jamaica, do they need to get hooked up with an account? Maybe that's what
we
got
to do. Well,
here's
the thing. That's what it is. Speaking of Usain Bolt needs to come out of retirement, did you see the tweet? Did you see Usain Bolt's tweet?
Oh, with Tyreek Hill?
Travis, let's pull up the tweet. No, this is not time to kill. It's Usain Bolt saying, hey, I might run one of the fastest men in the NFL in a 40-yard dash, which where he's been tweeting about his team. We got to find this tweet. Travis is scrolling. There it is. So Tyreek Hill was asked in a press conference if he could beat Usain Bolt. Tyreek Hill thankfully or like respectfully said, no, not in 100, but in a 40, yes. But he also said he only could beat him because he's old and washed up, this is what he implied. And Ty Hill was said, I said what I said. And then Usain Bolt said, say less. So is that him saying, I'm willing to challenge you in a 40-yard dash? And if that is true, does in retirement Usain Bolt have a chance against a peak fitness in their prime Tyreek Hill in a 40-yard dash? Which is less than 60 meters.
I think
meters,
he has a chance.
Not even I don't think Bolt. I think Tyreek Hill would smoke him in a
right now
40. Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, I don't know what.
But like, even with the year of training, how long would it take?
Okay, with the year of training, no. With the year of training, Bolt would beat him. But if he's completely out of shape,
would he though? In 40? In a 40?
Yes.
How many times was Usain Bolt in the lead of 100-meter dash after 40 meters? After 40 yards, excuse me.
How many times was he racing Tyreek Hill in a 100-meter dash? He was racing actual Olympians at that
good.
Point.
I mean,
he's
Tyreek
good.
Hill,
Christian Coleman ran an actual 40 and ran 4.1. So there's a marker for you. And he's a high 9.7 guy. And then you have Bolt,
okay,
who was a high 9.5 guy.
Okay, but do you think Bolt, a year of training now, could go back to 9.7?
I have no idea what he's capable of. I'm just not going to bet against him. And then there was this. I don't know if this was a legit time, but he
That's
ran the 9.22.
Not real.
And that was timed with non-automatic timing in any event.
I just think Tyreek Hill has so many advantages. He's younger. He's actually working out every day to be one of the fastest people he can be. Usain Bolt is older. He's retired. And the event is not his marquee event. Like, Usain Bolt's best event is the 200. So he's asking him to go all the way down to 40 yards.
You don't need to worry about this because we'll literally never see it. How many match races have been proposed to Usain Bolt throughout his career, and how many has he done? Remember the Bolt versus Farah thing in a 600 that they were going to do for charity, and they even had the same agent? We couldn't even get that going. He ran that 800 as some sort of promotion. And just jogged it. He raced the bus one time, but the bus went 10 miles an hour. I remember that during his career. But that's about
it.
I don't think
he raced the talk show host. He raced the British talk show host guy.
Yeah, James Corden.
James Corden. That was fun.
Yeah.
Anyway, okay, back onto the Olympics.
Tyreek Hill can do that.
Yeah, back onto the Olympics. Men's 100. yeah, I guess it's a wait and see on Bormel. If after the semis it's the same thing, then it's all she wrote. There's no way he'll come back from that. I guess you're trying to give him a mulligan here.
I'm not. I'm not. I'm just, I thought it was interesting context to add to it because he did not mention an injury. Now, again, I could probably count on one hand the amount of times we've talked to an athlete in the mix zone where they advance and then they also talk about an injury. It's almost like code for athletes not to do that. So it would not surprise me if there is some sort of issue, because I have enough faith in Bromell's ability and respect for what he's done to know that that was not him anywhere close to his best. So no, it would, at this point, I'd be incredibly worried, because as I said, where's the precedent for a guy who doesn't make it with a big Q qualifier, making it to the final and going beyond that meddling and going even farther beyond that and getting a gold? He's going to have to beat the odds entirely. So it would surprise me. It would surprise me if he's able to turn it around. Again, it would be, in a way, it would be a microcosm of the last 4 years of his career, 5 years of his career, where he goes from completely out of it to pull himself up off the ground and become the best in the world. He has to do that in 24 hours now. And that's difficult.
So what are we talking about next? Talk about the
Women's eight. Thingmo, man. Thingmo's good.
She's gonna win.
I've been telling you that she's good. You have not been listening to me for months and months and months.
No, it's very clear to you now. I started listening to her after the semifinals of the Olympic trials.
Yeah. So 158. Oh, it looked easy. Listen, if you have a 156 PB, a 158 is gonna look easy. I wouldn't be surprised if she sets a PB in the final. She also does this interesting thing, and I don't know if this is something she does consciously. She doesn't run right on the rail. Have you seen this? She's about halfway out.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's almost like she's inviting someone to try to go by on the inside so she can feel them and then pick it up. But it's also makes it harder for someone to pass on the outside because you're just occupying more space. But she looks like the favorite based on how she ran today and just how easy it was. But also, if you take into account the past 2 months, Raven Rogers, the other American in the final, Great Britain has three in there. Gemma Reekie, Keely Hodgkinson, and Alex Bell. Natoya Gould looked good in that first heat where she finished ahead of Reekie. But I think Mo is the favorite, and I think Reekie and Gould would be the two main challengers. Big surprise. The biggest surprise we can say is Aja Wilson not making it through. She was in that first heat, and it went out slow, so you knew she was going to have to be top two. And she was there with 150 to go, and then Reekie and Gould ran away from her, and then she ultimately faded to fourth.
Yeah. Qualifying in the 800 is weird. A lot of times some people who have the talent and are in your mind finalists just don't make it because of the draw of how the 800s play out, because you can have such a fast one round and a slower second round. One fast heat and one slower heat. But it's not just Aja Wilson who kind of was left. Almanza of Cuba, she's been running incredible. Rosemary Almanza didn't qualify. Mm-hmm. And obviously the world champion in 2019. I'm not going to try to say her last name. Nakai?
But with Wilson,
she got dead last.
She was in. Wilson was in a tough heat, and she was in good position. But I just think it's been a tough year for her overall. And she got third at trials in a somewhat similar race where there was a gap that formed, but she was able to claw back against that field. This field, much better, much deeper. And then she ran that 157 in the race with men at Penn, which gave me sort of hope that she was on the rise. But ultimately, it was not her year for her in this event. I think. What do you think Mo's strategy is going to be in the final?
I think it's going to be going out in 57, 56. I think her strategy is going to be try to PR. I think she's not going to try to Because she kind of did two different strategies. In the first round, she did the I'm better than everyone else strategy, so I'm just going to jog and then see what else everyone else does. No one's going to pass me because they know I'm better than you. She was like running in her local regional state meet where everyone's like, oh, God, a thing bows in my heat. Okay, no one pass her. Let her do whatever she wants. That was the first round. And then the second round is like, all right, now I'm going to show you that I have the strength and I'm going to go out in 57, 56 pace and just hold it and be able to – you're never going to even be near me. And no one she kind of let up near the end, but like the person chasing her in second never closed the gap on her in that entire final 100 meters. So there was zero like, oh, the wheels are falling off. You're tightening up. She just looked smooth the entire way. So you have to imagine with the thought of potential gold in your mind, she's going to go out there and I think she's going to PB and it's maybe she's a baby Rudisha coming around. Like maybe she's about to like take off and just be unbeatable for the next decade. I mean, starting off pretty well right now.
She's very comfortable running from the front. And I wouldn't expect her to change that in the final. And any athlete that reaches this level, they've dominated at the younger level for the most part. It's kind of rare. So they get used to running in front. But a thing, Mo, I know you've watched some of those old AAU races going back when she was, you know, 14, 15. She got used to just burying people and going for records. That's what she was doing. She was chasing these times. And nobody could keep up then. And you thought, okay, well, as she gets older, there's going to be competition. How is she going to respond to it? And she just keeps beating them the same way she was beating them when she was in eighth grade or ninth grade or in 10th grade. And it's just stunning to see that translate to the international level. That being said, Riki and Ghoul are particularly experienced. This is a deep field. I think obviously this is going to be her toughest test yet. And there's, you know, it's still the 800. So there's still wild things that can happen. If you were her opponent, what would you try to do? Would you just try to go out ridiculously hard the first 150 and just grab the lead and try to control the race and make her react? Or would you just try to cling to her shoulder?
Well, there's nothing you're going to be able to do because I think a thing Mo is planning on going out in like 56 low.
Yeah.
If I had to guess. Okay. And so what, you're going to go out in 55? Like, no, you're not going to do that. Oh, you're going to stay back and go out in 60 and hope you close a 4 second gap. No, that's not going to work either. The only thing you have really to do is just pray that she tightens up in the final 150. That's the only chance you have against a thing, though, I think.
Yeah. And this was, we could put it up on the screen now. This was basically a Thingmo's career prior to this, those huge margins, just dominating fields. And
how old is the Thingmo?
19.
She 20 yet? She's 19. So if she wanted to, she would still be eligible. Would she still be eligible to run at the AA Junior Olympics this week? In the 19-year-old section?
The rare double. I think they'll have her. Yeah, I think they would make accommodations for her.
She's like that one person who had an opportunity. Do I run in the AAU Junior Olympic Games or the Tokyo Olympic Games? She chose the right decision. She made the right decision, but I think she's the only one really in that AAU universe that ever was ever given that decision. Choose our Olympics or their Olympics. She's won enough AAU titles that she can go on and win an actual World Olympic title.
Travis says she could do 17, 18, I think.
Oh,
even though she's maybe because she just turned 19.
Oh, no, you can't. 19 year olds aren't allowed. It's 18 is the highest you can be.
Okay.
So take back that. So she'll have premise.
All right. So the double is gone.
The double's gone. It's disappointing. But maybe she can, you know, mess around with the birth certificate or something, and people won't know. Maybe she can just fly under the radar, like just no one will notice.
I think they'll have her.
I think it's gonna be hard for. I think they'll have her. They'll let her. They'll make an exception. It's like if you qualify for the Olympics and you're 19, you get to run.
Any year, you can go back. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
All right. Let's talk about the other running event final. the mixed gender 4x4. Now, Gordon, I watched the mixed gender 4x100 meter medley relay last night in swimming, just to put myself in the right headspace for this. The U.S. finished a disappointing fifth in that one. So I thought, hey, they're going to be out for redemption here. But they do not get it done. Poland wins the first installment of the mixed gender 4x4. Dominican Republic in second. The U.S. third. The U.S. ran the team that I thought they would run, the fourth and fifth place people from the trials. So that ended up being Trevor Stewart, Kendall Ellis, Kaylin Whitney, and Vernon Norwood. But a disappointing result, I think you'd say, from the U.S. It's kind of the expectation that every 4x4 they win. Doesn't matter if it's men, women, mixed gender. We expect the U.S. with their depth to figure out a way to get it done.
Do you think there's any now thought after this performance that Team USATF will start thinking, hey, maybe we shouldn't be sending our JV squad to the mixed 4x4 final, and that maybe we should try a little harder and put in a Randolph Ross or a, you know, Quinera Hayes and get that extra half second or 0.75 seconds. So.
The guy who anchored for Poland, his PB is 45.5. The U.S. should be able to beat that. I don't know what his split was today, but the U.S. should be able to use their second group or their third group and be able to find 45.5. Now, they were way down here after two legs. And some of these countries, yeah, they ran their better people. Dominican Republic has Paulino, who's a sub-50 woman. So that's a solid entrant. And I saw the Netherlands ran Femke Bol. Obviously, Poland ran some solid runners. Their other male runner was right at 45 flat, and Sweetie Arisatek's a solid runner for them too. It would be the equivalent of the U.S. basically running, you know, some of their best people. But until the schedule gets sorted out and there's clarity on like when this event is going to happen consistently, it's just going to be meet to meet. You see the splits there. So yeah, U.S. was down quite a bit. Paulino, yeah, 48.7 on that second one, which was about a second and a half faster than Ellis. And then the Polish woman split a 49.9 faster than Ellis. Stewart, I guess he's in first there. And then the second women's leg, Kaylin Whitney, 50.59, but that was behind Poland's 50.47. Norwood ran 44.43, which was faster than the Dominican team, even though they got beat, but slower than the Polish runner. And then Femke Bol, 49.74, didn't help Netherlands get a medal. It'd be interesting to see if that factors in, because she's still doing the 400-meter hurdles. Like that event, they did the first round yesterday. And she's still going out there. I don't know. What do you think? Like, what would you do if your job was to allocate the Team USA resources as best you could to get as many gold medals as possible? What would you do given the schedule?
I would use up a really good, I would use up a top three 400 meter female. Because I feel like the difference between a Kaylin Whitney and a 49 second Felix Hayes or Jonathan is very different versus the difference between a 44 second Norwood or Stewart. And I feel like Cherry or Randolph Ross are probably going to run 44 seconds as well. Like, and 43, I don't think they're going to go to that well. Right. So I think what they should have done is they should have ran a top three female with Kendall Ellis and then Stewart and Norwood. And I guess who that top three female is, you see who wants to do it, right?
Yeah. So we were talking the past couple of weeks about, is Felix going to do this? Because we just assumed it was a sure gold. And okay, yeah, throw her in there just to grab another gold. But they really could have used it.
She would have done it. They probably would have won. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Do you think she could have split 50 flat? I think she could have split 50 flat. That seems pretty reasonable. Yeah. And that would have been enough to cover that margin. of victory. Yeah. But yeah, the U.S. was, I mean, after two legs, they were in a bit of a hole that they had to climb out. Dominican Republic with Paulinho really put the pressure on everybody. But yeah, it's going to happen when you're choosing that second group. Or in the case of the, if you're just listing overall top 400 meter women, right, you'd put Muhammad, McLaughlin, Mo, and then you'd put the three 400 meter women. So this was really 7-8 basically for the U.S. And yesterday's were probably 9-10 if you look at it.
Yeah, I mean, basically, U.S. had an opportunity to put in a 48 high and a 49 low and a 243 mids. And would have won by like multiple seconds. But obviously, they're prioritizing their individual events. It is what it is. Congrats to Poland. You know? It's okay. It's okay. U.S. doesn't need to win everything. It's okay. It would sting a lot worse if they lost an actual 4x4. Like, let's be honest. Yeah. As Carl Lewis says, it's a clown event. So, it's a clown loss then.
There's only four people in this relay, and if other countries have really, really, really talented people like a Paulinho, right? Like, that's going to put pressure on you, and then you build your team out around that one superstar. And it's going to make, or in the case of Poland, just a lot of depth. They're really solid. But I think that the priority is the 4x4. It's not the mixed gender 4x4.
Yeah.
And if the priority was, if this relay was thought of the same way, as the 4x4, then we would have seen, well, we would see it at the end of the meet and not the beginning, but we'd also would have seen better people up there for the U.S. And they ran faster than their, to people like, why don't they just stick with the same team that the first team just barely cracked 3:12. So this was faster. Now I know there were all sorts of issues with that one, but that was, ultimately slower than what they put out there today with Stuart Ellis, Whitney and Norwood. Okay. Do you want to talk about, the discus?
Yeah, I won.
Danny Stahl won. To be clear,
Danny Stahl won. I did not win. Gordon Mack did not win. But Danny Stahl, the heavy favorite, won. Sweden actually goes 1-2. Pretty good for them. Actually, not pretty good. Very good. They were expected to win, but to have two medalists, even better. Wiesen Hodinger got that medal for third. I put him as a plus 225 to medal, and he medaled. And it was by a close margin, 67.07 to 67.02. I thought about putting some money on Matthew Denny because he had a good qualification, but I stuck to my guns and I went with Wiesen Hodinger of Austria. Or is it Austria? Is that?
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, there you go. Yep. U.S. athlete Sam Mattis got eighth with the season's best. But really, this entire year has been Daniel Stahl just dominating the event. He's never lost. He's always been multiple meters ahead of most people. And it came to fruition again here at the Olympic Games. So congrats to the two Swedes going 1-2.
Action from the morning session. Women's 4-meter hurdle heats, pretty much chalk. Muhammad ended up being the fastest qualifier, but Femke Bol and Sidney McLaughlin looked comfortable. Men's 800 heats, Ferguson Rocic went 143.75 in a first round, which is a statement to say the least, and all the favorites went through there.
Should I give should we get into a little bit of some Gordon Betts?
Yeah, let's do Gordon Betts death heats, and then if there's any questions in the chat, we'll get to those.
So I'm gonna do one. This is not really related to Gordon's bets, but it's kind of related to the 800. Michael Cerruti, no one is going to have – he's going to have really good odds. And I'm telling you, Michael Cerruti, I think he's going to win, but I'm going to put a lot of money on him meddling just as a backup plan. But I do I think Cerruti and Murphy are the two, like, people I'm most confident in meddling because I think they know – They just know how to win these weird races. They look like they're not in it, and then they're for some reason they're still in it with 50 meters to go, and then they find a way to close that final 50. Amos and Correa are the big guns with the fast times, but Cerruti and Murphy, keep an eye on those two. And we were hearing that I saw a report. Apparently, Bryce Hoppel's been hurt, and now he's 100%, and he looked really good in that prelim. Do you think Hoppel is back to the top four type finisher he was in 2019?
It's hard to tell because we've only had that prelim to look at. It would make sense that he was banged up earlier in the year because he looked solid, and then he went to trials, and it was a bit of a struggle. But the trials are such a difficult beast that you're just trying to get through them. But if he is 100% now, I think he's absolutely a medal threat. Murphy, to me, just looks so bouncy out there, just so effortless. And I feel really good about him as a medalist, probably more than Cerruti if I had to pick, just because it seems like he's just – it feels like he just timed his season perfectly here. So yeah, you're up like $500 or something on these bets.
Yep. Impressive. Lost 100 and then made 600. So I'm up 500. That's how it works.
All right. Death heats for tomorrow. Death heats for the next session. What are you looking at here? I get you. We could look at the men's 8, or we could look at the men's 100, or the women's 100 meter hurdles. In those events, is there anything that jumps out to you?
I feel like there's really no such thing as a death heat in the like short sprint semifinals, because you're either going to make the final or you're not. Like, there's no tactical thing in it. Like,
well, that's how all heats work.
I know, but I don't think there's really a death heat in the 100 or the 100 hurdles. I mean, is Trayvon Bromell now considered a death person to go up against now? I don't know. Is he?
I wouldn't want to race against him. I'd be upset if he was in my heat. And then you have these other guys who are absolute studs. You got one there with, let's see, Blake DeGrasse, Leo Talela. You got Yeah, Bromell, Ogunode, who ran really well today, Browning of Australia, who ran 10-0 and won his heat, and Adegoke of Nigeria. If you told me ahead of time this was going to be Trayvon Bromell's semi-heat, I'd say, oh, this is going to be a cakewalk. And now I'm looking at it from the perspective of, oof, can he just get one of those? Can he get any sort of qualifier into the final?
Speaking of this heat, let's bring up a picture of Rohan Browning. I think we got our version of the Craig Angles of the men's 100. Did you see him? He won his heat from Australia with the long locks. He has that mullet look. He's going to be the people's champ if he can make the final. He's going to be viral. If he makes the 100-meter final, everyone is going to be – he's going to be a meme when they show his face on it, because he'll probably be the only white guy on the starting line as well. So it'll be like a very funny thing. But look at this guy. He looks like a rugby player. Looks like he's coming back from a fraternity after watching a rugby
match.
He's got
a mullet.
Like that. But he's got the mullet. And he ran well. He won his race, his heat. He got that lumberjack. Look at that. Look, this guy potentially is going to make the Olympic final in the 100-meter dash. Like, oh, wow. It's hilarious. It's amazing. They talked about how he's only run races in Australia. And this was his first race outside of Australia. And he wins his heat. I'm cheering for him. Rohan Browning is going to be my people's champ pick if he can make that final. That'd be awesome.
So I'll give you a death heat. I'm going to go with, in the men's 800, heat 3. You got Amos, Elliot Giles, Isaiah Jewett, Ferguson Rotich, Nabil of Morocco, Risley of Australia, Tuca, and then Boss. So you have this combination of big names, because obviously Tuca's been a medalist. Boss has won a gold medal, although he barely squeaked into this final. You got the Rotich, who just dropped a 143. You have Jewett, who you know is going to make this race incredibly fast, which is probably a relief to people in this heat, because you'll get non-autos out of this one. And then you have Giles, who was amazing during the indoor season. He's run 143 mid. And then, of course, Amos, who comes in with the fastest time on the year. That one would be my death heat for day three.
Yeah. Do you think there's a chance? Okay. I would say the biggest names in the men's 800 are Amos, Rotich, Murphy, Career, Saruni, and let's put Giles. Those six. Do you think all six make the top eight? Or do you think that we're going to have? Do you think we're going to have a person who thought could medal not make it to the final? The way like Aussie 100% didn't make it.
This event is going to be more unpredictable than the women's 800 for sure. Because we've just talked about since Brazier went out how hard this thing is to forecast. And the guy who comes in as the top seed is the guy who has not run well at major championships save for one. And then people who ran modest times in years past have had a good track record meddling in this event. It's going to be, you're going to get a final where you're going to have several upsets in the semis, I think. And then you're going to look back and you think, is that actually an upset? Or was there any reason to believe that person was solid to begin with? Looking ahead, I wanted to talk about, and then we'll get to questions in the chat. So if people have them, throw them in there. Looking ahead after that first round of the women's 4 meter hurdles, I want to talk about that race, because obviously Muhammad McLaughlin take care of business in their opening heat. So we'll see them again on day number four. We'll see them again on day number four in the semis. And they've already posted the start lists for that. And Muhammad's going to be in heat one, McLaughlin in two, and then Bowl in three. So the three big names are in three separate heats. But that first round, to me, Muhammad goes sub 54 and looked really good, looked technically sound the whole way through. Felt like she really wanted to get a good solid effort out of it. Bowl and McLaughlin just were in cruise control, it felt like, and were especially cruising in the last 20 meters. Did you get anything out of this first round as it pertains to who you think ultimately is going to win and what type of time we're going to see?
I think the main thing I got out of this round was the quote that came out of Sydney McLaughlin after her first race, where they asked her about pressure. I was like, do you feel any pressure? And she said, pressure is an illusion, which is a great quote. That's t-shirt.
Put that on a t-shirt. That's a t-shirt.
Right? PR, prelim time is PR time type level of quoting. pressure is an illusion.
Did she stare right at the camera when she said it? Brought to you New Balance.
When you hear someone say that, you just feel like, oh man, you're right. I'm a piece of shit. Like, damn, she's got it under control. Her head is like in the ultimate best place it could ever be when you're saying lines like pressure is an illusion. Because let's be honest, there is a lot of pressure on her. World record holder, trying to win her first global medal. Like,
NBC camera crew is at her family's house. She's got one of those. Other events.
They're crowning her as the best, even though she's never actually won the best event, right? The global championship. So she feels like everyone has put the cart before the horse with her career, right? Anointing her yet. And she's like, well, I need to win first before you can anoint me. So there's a lot of pressure to be who they want her to be. And she's had the pressure since she was 16. Right. So I feel like by now she can laugh at the pressure. She's like, pressure, like you guys were interviewing me after like the heat one of the New Jersey like sectional round where I ran a hurdle, right? So
well, it makes me think back to 2016 when most people heard about her and when she qualified it. The Olympic trials, and she was asked on camera how she felt. I feel like I'm going to throw up. That's what she said. And so she acknowledged the pressure back then and how big of a stage it was. And it's interesting to see the evolution now to where she's at. It's tough though. The position that she's in is tough because yes, she's a world record holder. Yes, she's the favorite, but she's also competing against the person who's the second fastest in history, who's won a series of gold medals. And Femke Bol, who's seven all time, I think, has run the 7th fastest 4-meter hurdle race of all time. So yeah, she's good. Yeah, she's the favorite, but she doesn't have that big of a margin of error. If this was several years ago and she was just an outlier and doing this all on her own and she could run 52 high and still get a gold medal, it'd be one thing, but she needs to be close to her best to be able to win this race. And she needs to do it in a race where it's a combination of speed, strength, and technique. So if she's in that mindset, that's probably a good thing, because she needs to be completely locked in to get that gold. And I am looking forward in 10 years to the Pressure is an Illusion TED Talk that she gives.
It's going to be great. I mean, she could run 51.95 and maybe lose, because Dalila Muhammad just had a race of her life and runs 51.90 again, ties the world record. So like,
yeah,
it's not even about her having her best race. She could have her best race, but there's another athlete on the track whose potential best could be better than her best on any given day. So in a way, it's kind of great to have that mindset. Pressure is an illusion. Maybe she has a mindset like, maybe content to lose. I don't know. This is kind of getting like Mike Smith territory of NAU, but like the idea behind like, you only can control what you can control. Like,
uh-oh, are you going to say it? Are you going to say it? Say it.
No.
Say the three words. No. Is she trusting the process? Is that what you're saying? She's trusting the process.
No, not trusting the process, but like it's like, when you're going up against someone like Dalila Muhammad, you have to put somewhere in your mind that like, you may not win and it's okay. Because
yeah, you detach yourself from
you
the
can't,
outcome.
Yeah, you got, yeah, like, stop thinking about the outcome. That's what Mike Smith says. Don't worry about the outcome. People who worry about the outcome freak, you know, it's not.
So what you're saying is pressure is an illusion is sort of a synonym for trust the process, which I welcome, because if I hear trust the process from an athlete, coach, one more time, I was going to throw my camera down on the ground. So this is a welcome sign. If people come up with other ways to say trust the process without actually uttering the most tired cliche now in all of sports, I will be thrilled. I will be absolutely thrilled. So thank you to Sydney for introducing a new phrase. And of course, the inevitable t-shirts that are going to come from it.
Yeah, I can't wait to first cross-country meet of the year is asking Mike Smith after their team wins or loses and be like, hey, what are your thoughts on pressure? Is it an illusion or is it real? And he'll be like, pressure is an illusion. Like, it's definitely a Mike Smith quote coming out of Sydney McLaughlin, which is great.
Yeah.
It's like them and like, you know, that meme where they're holding hands. Arnold Schwarzenegger, Mike Smith and Sydney McLaughlin with the inspirational quotes.
Yeah.
Thoughts on pressure. Okay. Right.
In the chat, someone asked if we're predicting Jamaican 4x1 world record. Yeah, we did that prior to the meet. And then when you go 10.61 and then 2.10.7s, and then you add in Brianna Williams or Natasha Morrison, whoever they add in, I'm not sure who they're going to add in. But those are two more women who are under 11 seconds. I think the only way they don't break it is if they drop the baton or someone gets hurt. But they have a huge margin for her. I went through on that clip comparing the U.S. 2012 PBs when they set the world record to Jamaica, and now Jamaica's improved that because Elaine Thompson's basically run a tenth faster. So there we go.
So our clip is already on the internet and someone is upset about it. This is on you though. We never said Team USA could beat Jamaica ever in a 4x1. We never said that. I've never even thought that.
I think it was when Serenity was on after that 200 and we were talking about that. Is that what they're talking about? Shakira or not? You didn't stand.
I never said that.
Well, I want to read this. I never do this, but I'm going to do this. Yo, Shakira or not, y'all didn't stand a chance in the 4x1 or 100. Go do commentary on rugby or something. You don't know what you're talking about. Well, I mean, that last part could be true. I didn't say with Shakira they would have a chance. It was very clear.
Oh. I do say Shakir had a chance in the 100. So
it is funny though. You say something, you make a, you're wrong on like 9 of your 10 predictions. The one you get right, people are like, "You're wrong. How dare you never believed in us?" No, that's the only thing I got right. That's the only thing you should be commending me for. We got another comment in there about you calling it a clown relay, the mixed 4x4, and people are saying, wondering if it was a clown relay, why did the U.S. appeal to get back in? To which my response would be, there's no clown gold medals. It could be a clown event, but the gold medal is real.
Yeah. No, when you say you're an Olympic champion, they don't ask you what event. They just take your word for it, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, how many people have called themselves Olympians who were 4x4 alternates?
Yeah. Listen.
This is what you do.
You can only race who you race. So credit, 100% credit to Poland.
Another t-shirt.
And credit
t-shirt right
there. Credit to Dominican Republic. They earned their medal. That's the way the race unfolded. But if you're telling me if the United States ran their best team, I am going to disagree with you on that. And I think anybody who's paid attention to track would disagree with you about that. And it's very clear they're valuing the 4x4, the regular 4x4, over the mixed gender 4x4. And I think it's, someone asked, why is it a clown event in track but not in swimming? It's a clown event in swimming too.
Yeah.
Swimming though, I will say this, swimming it's more interesting though because you have the different strokes. So you're looking at how you maximize it. So maybe you have a superstar butterflyer that you want to feature, but it would make more sense to put a person on freestyle that, you know, shortens the gap. So I spent some time on that. Looking at the difference.
Also
in swimming, the gaps.
Being behind and ahead is a difference because of the waves. Like,
yeah, the
that
wake,
whole,
yep,
like
yep,
being
yep.
in the wake and all that stuff. I don't know how swimming works, but I know that's a big factor. But in the end, it's still, I mean, if I'm going to say anything, did you watch the mixed gender triathlon relay?
I did not. I just watched the swimming one.
So. Okay. Well, USA, our boy Morgan Pearson anchored, and for those who know Morgan Pearson, Colorado alum, ran cross country for them. They got second. USA got second to Great Britain. The triathlon relay was a 300-meter swim, an 8K mm-hmm. bike, and then a 2K run.
Wait a minute.
2K run.
Wait, and each person did part of it?
No, each person does a whole one. So you do one person does it, and then – so it was a male.
I was going to say.
Then female.
2K run, we should have put Centro on it. That would have made more sense, right? Put Centro on the 2K
Well, that's
run.
What made me thinking. It's like we need to do – you need to have Caleb Dressel and then, you know, whoever – first, who is our best biker? I don't know who our best biker is. And then, mm-hmm. you know, whoever our best runner in the five, Paul Chelimo in the 5K, whatever. So he ran a 2K and his splits were, he went out and he was like 10 meters. No, he's like 8 seconds back of second because Morgan Pearson after the bike was in third. And he went out in the opening K of his 2K in 2:25.
Yeah.
And then he caught him and passed him. And then the other guy just didn't have anything left, and then he kind of jogged in for second.
Right, right.
But it was fun. Like, I felt like I was watching like a cross country race, seeing Morgan Pearson in the final mile of Terre Haute in a 10K because mm-hmm. he had just done a whole swim, a whole bike, and now he's trying to sprint in the final 2K. It was fun to watch.
Yeah.
And USA won. I mean, not won. They got second, which is a win, right? Get a medal.
Yeah. Yeah. As Americans, people need to be more appreciative of any type of medal. I think this whole like it's and swimming is the worst at it because they treat silvers like tragedies. And then you turn and you turn on a track and I think they do a better job actually putting into some sort of realistic context. Yeah. Anyway. All right. I think we'll leave it there. I don't know. People seem like you already did your bets. We already did that segment.
No. I have to say, I have two bets coming up.
Okay, then do it. Let's go.
Women's shot put, Valerie Adams. I am betting to medal at +175. And then men's high jump, Ivanyuk of Russia. I'm betting to medal at 175. Men's 100, I don't know yet. I have to figure it out.
I'd stay away. I would stay way away from that if you want some
advice. I think I'm going to put... But I think I'm going to do Fred Curley to medal is going to be my bet.
So when you know what would be interesting? Back. It'd be interesting to see the shift in Bromell's odds.
Oh, they're going to go crazy.
Pre-first round and post-first round.
He was like minus 130, and now he's going to probably be like plus 300, which then make the good bet. Hey. Trayvon Bromell plus 300? I'll take that.
Oh, my goodness. We've created a monster here, folks. Okay, the FlowTrack podcast, you can find it on YouTube. Subscribe if you haven't yet to the channel. You can also download the audio version wherever you listen to podcasts or on the site. We'll be back tomorrow. I'll be joined by Serenity. Gordon is getting the day off to go spend his $500. Thank you to Travis for producing. Thank you to Colt for producing. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in all throughout the world. We'll talk to you guys tomorrow.